Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Time to get real and let you in on a secret. Welcome, everybody, to the Modern Jewish Home Show on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm your host, Heather Dean. Since this show launched earlier this year, I've introduced you to a wide variety of experts, each who has excellent advice about making home life better, improving our relationships, spiritual growth, and even how to grow our business. Well, today we're actually going to get real and personal with some of our regular experts. Whether you're a first-time or regular listener of the show, you'll be surprised and inspired by the journeys and life lessons of today's guests on my show. For example, my first guest today is the great Jody Samuels. She's the co-founder of JICNY, which is the abbreviation of Jewish International Connection New York, and that's an organization she designed to be the first point of contact for Jewish people who have moved to New York City. But on today's show, Jody isn't here this time to talk about being a community leader or a master networker, even though she's both. Jody is also a wife and mother, and she's here today to talk about being the mother of a child with special needs. Her sweet daughter Kayla is a child who has Down syndrome. Jody will tell us all about being Kayla's mom and how Jody and her husband advocated and still advocate on Kayla's behalf for a proper education and other basic rights that every child should have. And later on in the show, author and popular public speaker Orit Esther Ryder is dropping by to let us in on her personal experience with multiple sclerosis. Orit Esther speaks to audiences everywhere about her favorite topic, Emunah, which is faith in God. Well, it's precisely her faith which has carried her through the many struggles and challenges that go with being a patient with multiple sclerosis. And her story will not only inform you about this and other autoimmune diseases, but her story will stay with you during your next challenge. And capping off today's show is another visit from Chef Ahuva Staum, founder of Wish It Dish It Catering. How is Ahuva getting personal today since everyone else is? Well, here's how. It's Ahuva's birthday today. And what better birthday present for us is there than a chef's all-time favorite recipes? And Ahuva promises that these will not be a major production, but rather mostly one-dish meals, which the family and your guests will like a lot. You can go to my host page at the Israel News Talk Radio website to click on the link to Ahuva Staum's website and check out just about all of the recipes we're talking about today. They say if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger. And today's guests prove that the strong person that we all are is the true us who emerges as we push off life's challenges and clear the hurdles. So stay tuned for today's unforgettable show after a break.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Bentico, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Heather Dean, and I'm speaking with Jody Samuels, who launched with her husband, Gavin, the JICNY. That's the abbreviation for the Jewish International Connection New York organization. And today we're speaking about advocacy issues for special needs children. Tell me why this is a cause that's important to you, Jody.
So, Heather, when we were leaving the hospital when my daughter was born, and before you leave, they asked to check your bracelet, my husband said to me, they should actually brand advocate on our forehead. And I didn't realize how true those words would be. Mm-hmm. But really, since my daughter, Kayla, who's now 8, she has Down syndrome, since she was born, in one form or another, we're always advocating. We're very, very committed to the idea of inclusion in every aspect of society. And because the world's not quite there yet, we feel that we're always advocating for that issue.
Okay, so can you just tell me, inclusion, this is on an institutional level? Because certainly nobody would disinclude a child if you're walking to the store or the market or anything that anyone else does.
So when I talk about inclusion, I'm talking about in our schools, in our synagogues. And those are the two places where, you know, we find that there's a lot of disconnect. There's a lot of laws that are passed about inclusion, but the reality on the ground doesn't always meet the standards of inclusion that, say, someone like I as a parent would hope for my child.
Okay, so what were your experiences initially?
So when my daughter was 2 years old, we decided we wanted to put her in the community Jewish day school that her siblings were in on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And they refused to even meet us, interview us, assess her. And they said no, based on her diagnosis. And while we objected and we said, the goals of your two-year-old program are communication and socialization skills, and that's what we want from our kid, they refused. And that took us on a journey, taking the community to task and saying, if you're like one of the wealthiest zip codes in the world and the children in New York City come with unbelievable services from the state that are not a burden on the school, and we really hit brick walls.
May I ask, when you say that you were refused, so what did they do? Did they just not pick up the phone, or did they say, what did they say? Did they say, we're sorry, Mrs. Samuels, but something about the resources, right? That's usually what one hears.
Yeah,
we don't have the resources.
I mean, ultimately, after much begging, pleading to get a meeting, and then getting a very cold shoulder at a meeting, and then getting a letter to say, oh, we're sorry, but we don't have the resources. And then, you know, when you ask questions about, well, how come other children can have, you know, shadows in a classroom and your children, your child can't, and then they start talking about liability issues and, you know, and that they can't manage it and there's no space. And when you start getting like 15 different reasons, you realize that actually you're just not wanted. So that took us on a whole journey of we ran public forums because we realized that a lot of the people who are even in our close inner circle didn't realize what a challenge it was. So we ran a series of public forums where we brought in professionals, we brought in special needs people themselves to talk, and with different topics to try and educate people on what the challenges are to have a special needs child in the community.
And what do you mean by a forum? Is this like a town hall you had set up so that people, obviously not as combative, as one would hope, not combative like a town hall, but sort of a question and answer information seeker? Was it sort of like that? There's a panel?
Yes. Okay. We brought in, we ran like four different series with panelists, and people could ask questions and people could vent. So it was a little bit like a town hall, and we had a lot of media there covering it. I've also moved to another stage of this is where I do a lot of speaking. I speak to like AP psychology students in like high schools about special needs. I speak to rabbinic students. I go to medical schools and I speak to, you know, incoming doctors, because I feel like so much of people's issues that they have with inclusion is lack of information, and people don't actually realize what is possible these days. And even like doctors will send me these notes. They're like fifth year medical students, and they'll send me these notes saying this was the most informative lecture they had the whole year because they heard from a parent what the textbooks just don't say.
Right, right. I do want to talk about some of the feedback you got, but I do want to, a thought occurs to me, in those early stages, you know, you are a mover and a shaker. You're used to getting things done, right? In the right way. And here was a way, here was a time you weren't getting it done. That must have been horribly frustrating. You weren't getting something done. You're so used to succeeding, right?
So, yeah, I mean, I was very, very frustrated and lots of tears. I never had tears when my daughter was born and hearing the diagnosis, but the frustration, how the community treated us and that. But it just didn't stop me. So we pushed and pushed until we had success. And ultimately, my daughter went to another Jewish day school, SAR in the Bronx. And it was an amazing school, an amazing opportunity. And there we really learned. Chabad also in Manhattan took her. And we learned really how inclusion really is possible and felt that we have to be like the leaders for other parents so they don't have to go through what we went through.
You also mentioned the getting some feedback from medical students. What feedback did you get from parents at the time? Did they feel empowered? What did they say to you personally?
I think that a lot of special needs parents are scared or overwhelmed or don't have the leadership. Many parents agreed with what we were saying and they were like, just like, wow, hopefully she's successful so we can like lead behind. And some of them were also scared that we would like rock a boat and, you know, create too much controversy around the issue of special needs, and they just want to exist in the background. But the majority of parents were very, very excited that there was someone leading.
Then you made Aliyah to Israel. You moved your whole family to Israel. and you have your daughter, Kayla. So what did you, what was your experience then? Certainly you'd heard of probably Shalva, which is a whole big organization operation for families of special needs kids.
So we had been actually coming to Israel and bringing my daughter to Merkaz Feuchstein every year in the summer. And,
that is what?
It's an institution that provides special services to children with disabilities, but they're very focused on inclusion.
Oh.
And one of the professor, Reuven Feuchstein, who was like famous for his inclusion activities, had a book that said, like, if you love me, don't accept me as I am. And that sort of was really our like rallying cry. Like, instead of the special needs sort of parents often are like very passive and like, okay, well, you know, God gave me a special needs child. What am I going to do? I'm going to give them the best services. But we were like, no, if we love Kaylee, we're not going to accept her as she is. We're always going to push her to the next stage, just like we'd push our typical kid, like, to reach their absolute potential.
Mm-hmm.
And we came here, and Feuchstein's been a great support for us, but what has been very challenging is the school system, because we understood that we were allowed to do inclusion by law, which is true. However, the law was never supported with an education budget. So while it was passed in 2007, it's gone back to the Supreme Court a few times.
Mm.
Only really high socioeconomic families can do inclusion in this country, because there is no budget. If you put your kid in a special education program, you get transport, you get therapies,
right,
you get team meetings, an extended school day.
Mm-hmm.
And really, when you do inclusion, you get what they would say in this country, bavakasha.
Oh, wow.
Really, mm-hmm, figure it out for yourself for the most part. You do get limited services, but it's almost impossible for a family to do it here. Because mm-hmm, in order for inclusion to work, your child really needs the support, the academic support, the social support, the behavior strategies, the training of the sayat. And there's just not enough resources given in the school system here to really make it work effectively.
How about socially? What is your experience of having your daughter and bringing her around? Do people have misconceptions here in Israel about a special needs child?
So I find in general Israelis are more open to special needs. I think we live in a country that, even in the most secular sense, in the army, a value of a life is a life, and you will do anything for a life.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we've never had the kind of questions we got in New York. Like, you know, when one of the schools, when we couldn't get my daughter in, the one of the board members of this Orthodox Jewish day school sent an email saying, you chose to bring this problem into the world. Don't make your problem ours.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't think in Israel we ever have encountered that kind of attitude. Like, people respect, okay, you have a special needs child for one. I find that the parents in the school are open, but there's still challenges, because my child might have impulsive issues and things that maybe affect more her personal interaction with other kids.
Mm.
But I've never felt like in the synagogue context or in going to an after-school activity or in class that anybody didn't want my child to be there.
Oh, that's a nice thing to hear. What are Kaylee's interests? What does she like to do? Who are her friends?
So anybody who knows Kaylee, she's exceptionally sociable, and she's like the mayor of Jerusalem or the mayor of whichever city she happens to be in at the time.
Yeah, how's that?
She
holds court, you mean?
She's very social. She loves interacting with people and engaging. She's very friendly. And, you know, when she's not with people, she loves doing art. Art is her favorite thing. She's always loves art. She loves music.
Mm-hmm.
But I think her favorite thing in the world is being center of attention.
Oh, how cute. How sweet. Well, who wouldn't love to be the center of attention once in a while? You've blogged about your experiences on Metro Ima. Is there a blog that stands out to you, as a post that stands out to you, maybe for the feedback or maybe for the content itself?
I mean, I've had many blogs that have gotten a lot of attention, especially the ones I write about special needs. One that, like, I guess resonated with a lot of people, both in good and bad, but it was, I wrote Why I Hate Chesed.
Mm.
And for me, that defines everything that I fight for inclusion.
So Chesed can be loosely translated as tzedakah or righteous act?
People doing
charity.
Things because they think they're doing something good.
Okay.
And I don't want my daughter to be included in an organization because, you know, like, well, some organization hosts a Shabbaton for special needs people, and it's like tick, we gave our $5,000 check, tick, now we've done our special needs duty. Mm. Or alternatively, you have these like high school girls who are told to do chesed projects. They're supposed mm-hmm. to do something where they mm-hmm. give back, and I don't want my daughter to be somebody's project. Mm. I want people to open their homes. I want them to open their schools. I want them to open their hearts, their synagogue, and truly include my daughter, not just have her as a side project.
Wow. I really thank you for coming and sharing your insights and experience about Kaylee. And if you would like to be in touch with Jody Samuels for more information, you contact her at jody@metroema.com. More in a moment. Thanks so much, Jody Samuels.
Thank you.
I'm Jono Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
New shows are posted every Thursday at 7 p.m. Israel time, highlighting the lighter side and advancing a positive view of Israel here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Modern Jewish Home Show on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Heather Dean, speaking to you from Israel. My guest, Orit Esther Reiter, is a teacher, consultant, and writer who offers comprehensive one-on-one therapy she calls Torah therapy. She does consultations that include but aren't just limited to guided imagery, exercises, energy medicine, analysis based on body ailments, color therapy, and deep soul talk. She works in both English and Hebrew. You can email Orit Esther Reiter at oritreiter@gmail.com. That's oritreiter@gmail.com. Check out her website, dailydoseofemunah.com. Emuna is spelled E-M-U-N-A. And dailydoseofemunah.com focuses on emotional wellness through Torah wisdom. Welcome, Orit Esther Reiter, to the Modern Jewish Home Show.
Oh, thank you so much. Great being here.
So you are here to talk about the wisdom and insights that you have gained from your diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. I'm just wondering if you could first give us a little background. Tell us about your life and career before your diagnosis.
Yeah, so it's been, I'm the wandering Jew. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I have one older sister. My parents got divorced when I was about 5 years old. Childhood was pretty rocky, went through a lot of emotional trauma, a lot of instability. I moved around a lot, like I said, really from home to home. Unfortunately, at the age of about 5 or 6, I was violated also as a child. Met a lot of anti-Semitism in public school when I had gone to in elementary school. At about 12 or 13, I moved to Israel. Loved it here. I had fantastic experience living here. Wasn't observant. All my life was totally not observant. In my high school year, I met my husband. We got married. I mm-hmm. served in the army for about 6 months, mm-hmm. got married, got released. And when he finally finished his army service, we moved to America. Mm-hmm. And I went to pursue my career, which was to become a chef.
A chef.
Yeah.
Wow.
Got my degree in culinary arts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that and worked as a caterer for quite a few years until I got diagnosed.
Ah, so then what brought you to the doctor's office? What was it? And tell me about that actual meeting where he gave you the news.
Right.
But so, what brought you there in the first place?
So it was very interesting. So I was pregnant at the time with my fifth child. About 3 months into the pregnancy, started getting some tingling in my left fingers. Dagor started crawling up to my elbows, you know, my shoulder. And one day I said, oh my gosh, I actually touched like my left part of my body. I'm like, oh no, I don't feel it. No sensory mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. So I went to my neurologist. In the beginning, I actually thought it was maybe carpal tunnel, something
right.
to do with the pregnancy.
Or a pinched nerve.
Yeah.
It sounds like that to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And eventually they did an MRI. They thought I had a stroke. Thank God ruled that out. Long story short, they said, okay, it looks like you've got some lesions there in your brains, which looks like it could be MS, but go home, have your baby. And if it comes back again, you know, we'll diagnose you more to the core. So I did. And after 3 weeks passed, I had my baby, thank God. And then really 3 months after that, all the symptoms came back. They did a spinal tap, and that's how. So I look at it as, what an act of kindness and compassion. God gave me a whole year to get used to the idea that mm-hmm. I probably have MS. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like this shock. Mm-hmm. So when I remember sitting on the stairwell in my home, when I got the phone call where the spinal tap came back with the, you know, positive bands showing that there is MS in my system, I remember saying, I'm not surprised. Like, I kind of thought that that's what I had for a whole year.
And multiple sclerosis is that an autoimmune disease?
Autoimmune disease, okay. Whereby the body attacks an invisible enemy. It reads the symptoms wrong and flushes the body with antibodies, mm-hmm. and it attacks. Now, different autoimmune disease, the antibodies attack different parts of the body. So in multiple sclerosis, it attacks the neurological system.
Mm-hmm. Because it perceives incorrectly that there is a problem there. Interesting.
Yeah. And
interesting.
It starts eating at the myelin, mm-hmm. the protective shield of neurological spinal cord. Yeah.
Right. You know, that's interesting. Even on a figurative level, to say that the body reads that there's a danger or enemy in the body that doesn't exist, right? Like if you have antibodies searching your body for the enemy.
It's amazing how you can put that in emotional perspective, because I was always a very self-critical and self-rejecting personality. And that was one thing that I always pushed myself. I was always, you know, and I still am. I'm a go-getter. I got to do it. I have to do. That was very, very hard being diagnosed. Suddenly I had to stop in my tracks and like God said, sorry, your legs aren't going to be working anymore. You know, you have to sit on the couch and find something else to do. Mm-hmm. And it was really a detour in my life.
Right. So what did that mean as far as your business? Because when you're a caterer, when you're a chef, even if you're a home chef, you're on your feet a lot.
18 hours nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, while they're putting out hors d'oeuvres, you're thinking about dessert. I mean, it's a constant challenge in your mm-hmm. mind and in your body. So it was interesting. It was like a double-edged sword. On one hand, I was upset because, of course, I saw myself always writing a cookbook as opposed mm-hmm. to a book that I have now, Turnaround, which speaks about emunah and faithfulness and trusting in God. Mm-hmm. So very interesting that, you know, now suddenly I have to change my pathway around. On the other hand, I was pretty burned out, I must say. 15 years of being on my feet, working nonstop, always trying to please the other person mm-hmm. was very, very tiring. And really, when I look at it, it was a God-given gift, because I don't think I would have ever left it. Mm-hmm. So my husband always says, God gave you MS so you could do the daily dose of emunah. And I embraced that.
Wow.
And I realized that that pathway was closed for construction, no more chefing. And now, and like I like to say it, I went from catering the body to catering the soul.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So, or as they would say on Waze, recalculating?
Yes.
You had to redirect toward
that. That's right.
And can you tell me just a little bit about that bridge from closing down the business to finding your new life avodah?
Yeah.
Tell me about that bridge, because a lot of people are stuck on the bridge.
Yeah. That, you know what? Actually, Hasidic masters bring down and say that being on that bridge, when you're in between two mm-hmm. stages, that's the most darkest moment.
Yeah.
And that really is. So like I said, this is what I call hugging your reality. If you're in a position emotionally where you understand that life is about flowing, it's about movement, everything moves, your heart pumps, your blood moves, everything, you're breathing, right?
Yes.
The contraction, expansion, all the time. Life is about change. And if you can embrace the change, it means you're hugging your reality. And when you in fact hug your reality, guess what? Your reality hugs you back. Mm. So at that bridge, you have a choice. Am I going to stride and start looking at the new environment, the new view, the new scenery? Am I going to embrace that? Or am I going to fight my way and say, no, I don't want.
Yeah.
It's a mental acceptance.
Yeah.
And because I am a fighter, I said, this is one thing I'm not going to actually fight. I'm going to actually fight to make it happen that in this new reality, I'm going to make a new thing.
I want to bring up something that I've heard in your talks, is that the person who's in that zone where they want to fight, they feel a little bit helpless. You had said, even now with all of your insights and you give so many lectures and you've written and put together CDs, that even at this point of the wisdom that you've amassed, that you also have your days. Right, we're allowed those days. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, and I realized that before you go ahead and you climb on the next step, you have to put all your strength to your muscles on in your thighs, sort of contract to get yourself be able to climb that upper step.
Yeah.
That's how I look at life. When I'm going through a contraction of like tightening my muscles and things are tight, and I say, God, I'm in a really tight space right now. I think to myself, okay, Orit, you're going now to a step up. You're now in between. You're in that in-between stage.
Right,
and
right.
That's how I get through it. And I understand that God's will is there even in that contraction. Mm-hmm. Even when I find days where I have to sit on the couch and I don't have the strength to move, say, this is where you want me to serve you, from my couch.
Beautiful. Very, very nice. Okay, so you mentioned that it's our personal situation to correct when we have those days difficult, challenging. Tell me about then your book, Turnaround, how that might help someone who's in this space. And how is it available? Is it on Amazon?
On Amazon. Okay. You can find it in bookstores in Israel, South Africa, England, America. Yeah. Okay. But it's published by Mosaica Press, a really amazing team of editors and publishing house. Uh-huh. And they basically...
How could it help someone?
It's really... it's actually called Turnaround. Around, okay. And it's called 180 degrees in 180 days because there are 180 lessons where every day you hopefully are starting at A, and by the end of the 180 days, you're hopefully almost by Z, because you know, learning Emunah and learning faithfulness and connection to God is really a lifelong journey. Okay. But that's really the whole process, is learning to expand your vision to see there's more to life than what I'm going through in the here and now.
Okay. So I know there's like 180 sections or days worth of work, but I'm only if you could single out one that's speaking to you today that you can share with our listeners.
Right. So the way I look at it is there's a basic Emunah 101 lesson of faithfulness. And what does Emunah mean? It means faithfulness. It means loyalty. What am I loyal to? People think Emunah, faith, oh, blind faith. When you have no reason, grab onto something, grab on a cloud, grab on a dust bowl. I don't know, grab on something. That's not Judaism. Judaism means I am faithful. Mm-hmm. I am loyal to what? Whatever is written in the Torah, what the godly wisdom that God gave down to us at Mount Sinai that day, there was a letter there, a personal message for me that God loves me and that everything is good. And that's the message that we take along. And that's what I'm faithful to. No, even if it looks bad, I'm loyal to that teaching.
Right, right. Yeah, ne'amanut. Ne'amanut, yes. Someone who is being reliable or being faithful to our journey. And then for someone out there who's in the half minute we have remaining, someone out there who's struggling, any last blast of chizik, of strength that you can send to someone who really needs it?
Right. Just know that God loves you. And even if you don't see it here and now, there's a medicine being administered to you at this time that is healing you from some sort of ailment that you don't even realize is going on with you. Isn't that great if someone could give you that preventative medicine?
That's
Look at it that way.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your insights, Orit Esther Reiter. Folks, there's more to come on the Modern Jewish Home Show. Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Ari Fuld at Israel News Talk Radio. If you, like me, are sick and tired, if you've had enough of listening to all the anti-Israel lies and propaganda that's being spread online and offline, in the press, in the newspapers, on TV channels, in the newsrooms across the world, tune into my weekly show, Bulletproof, on Thursdays at 5 p.m. as we discover, expose, and completely destroy all anti-Israel lies and propaganda, and we're going to do it with just the truth. As an active IDF reserve soldier, an elite paratroopers unit, I will try to give you an inside look to the opinions of the men and women of the IDF on the situation. Bulletproof will give you the tools. More importantly, will give you the weapons to take down all anti-Israel activists, no matter where you meet them. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. Israel time to Bulletproof on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Modern Jewish Home Show on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Heather Dean, and I'm joined by Ahuva Staum today, her birthday. Ahuva has dropped by the studio to either tell us about her favorite birthday presents or to share with us her favorite all-time recipes. Ahuva runs a catering company based in Jerusalem called Wish It Dish It Gourmet Kosher Catering. She offers delicious food prepared in a wide variety of styles. You can either go to my host page at the Israel News Talk Radio website or to Ahuva Staum's website to check out just about all of the recipes we're talking about today. Happy birthday, Ahuva Staum. Welcome back to the Modern Jewish Home Show.
Thank you.
Okay.
On both counts.
On both counts, right, exactly. Okay, so your favorite recipes, these are one pot meals. That sounds like amazing, especially for a busy summer season. Okay, so what is on your mind with your favorites?
Well, my favorite is simple, and it's fun. When people have me over, they're always like, I'm so scared to invite to, you know, cook for you, your chef. And I'm like, no, my favorite food is a perfectly cooked piece of chicken and slightly burnt white rice.
Oh, okay.
Like one of the recipes that we talked about, which I guess is a great place to start, is exactly that. It's chicken with rice cooked underneath. And then, you leave it on the plot to slightly uncovered, it gets a little bit burnt. But it's puts it all in one place,
it's
one
nice.
Pan.
Nice, right. That's how my mother used to make it, and it felt like a crust. It's nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it also gets the fat and the juice and the moisture from the chicken gets absorbed into the rice, and it gets almost like risotto-y. Just creamy and thick. And then, like I said, you don't have to burn it. If you keep it completely sealed on the plata, it won't get that crispiness. But if you're related to my father, you like a little Cajun.
Okay.
But it's just, and people think about like all these steps and making the rice separate bread and getting a rice cooker. I just lay the rice in the bottom of a slightly greased pan, add in some MSG-free, of course, soup mix, and gluten-free, just the lily burrs from that I love. I put a layer of onions over that. Then you layer your chicken. You could do a whole chicken. You could do, bottoms cut up. You can just do six thighs, whatever you prefer. Lay it out, of course, single layer over the rice. And then put on your spices. I generally use something like Mrs. Dash, like an Italian herb mix, some paprika, some garlic. And then I sprinkle some more onions on top of that.
These are raw onions.
They're raw onions we're going to cook.
Okay.
They're going to be cooking inside of this. And then you pour your water over it so that you have about a quarter cup less than you would need for the amount of rice you're using. For a whole meal for a family, 4 to 6, 4 to 8, even if it's children. And like a whole chicken, I would use a cup and a half of rice. So that would be, a cup, 2 cups and 2 3/4 cups of water.
Okay.
Instead of 3 cups of water.
Got it. Okay. Oh, right.
And,
okay.
And then I sprinkle a little bit more onions on top. But here's the trick. Cover with silver foil tightly, completely and utterly sealed, which is what steams the rice and the onions. Like you said, the raw onions to start. And that way, you keep it in the oven that way for about 1.25 hours and then uncover it. Because then the rice is already mostly cooked, and that's when the chicken finishes. It takes about 30 minutes, maybe a little longer, depending how much you like your chicken cooked. Right. I personally am a meat thermometer person, so I check that it's at 170. And then I turn on the convection, if you have one, to just get a little crisp on the skin.
Very nice.
And
wow.
And that's it. I mean, you put it in, you come back 1.5 hours later, uncover it, or 1.25 hours. I mean, leaving it uncovered longer is okay. Don't uncover it too early.
Right.
It gets more moist if it stays, the longer it's covered, it gets more moist, but to a point, not more than 1.5 hours, 1.5 to 2 hours, but at the end there is what's actually going to finish the cooking. Until that, it's kind of steaming it.
But that's
a trick I use for always cooking chicken, keeping it covered for the first half the time and then uncover it at the end.
Nice. Very, very good takeaway. Okay. So what else did you bring as your favorite?
Well, this was something that I took from a recipe my mother started doing as I got older with brisket. Number 3 here in Israel, Chazeh Bakar, is people get daunted by it, but it's braised brisket is so easy. You just take the meat, you rinse it, of course, rub it down with salt and pepper. I live in latex gloves for these things. And then heat up some oil in a Dutch oven or whatever pot you have that's, can stand the heat for a while. Because this takes a few minutes, and then you just leave it overnight. You sear the meat on all sides, take the meat out, saute some onions and garlic, and then add some tomato paste, beer, spices. And if you want to make it a little bit barbecue-y, you can get your hands on some liquid smoke or smoked paprika, is more popular here in Israel. And you bring that to a boil, put the meat back in. You can even, if you want to make it, like I said, we said a full one-pot meal, add in vegetables. Sometimes I do potatoes and sweet potatoes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do root vegetables like beets and kohlrabi and celery. And then bring it to a boil again. And leave it overnight. And personally, I don't like leaving the gas on overnight.
Right,
so I bring it, take out my plata.
That way
I don't have to worry about gas. It's controlled heat. Right. And when I wake up in the morning, it's like, okay, I can't have basar first thing in the morning. Something very important to remember about meat that's cooked this long is you need to let it chill if you want to be able to actually have pretty slices.
Otherwise,
it just falls apart, which there's nothing wrong with shredded beef. I've never had a client complain about getting shredded beef.
Right.
But sometimes I'll turn it off 10, 9 o'clock in the morning. And especially because it's in the summer, I have until 3 in the afternoon to let it cool. So I can slice it.
Right,
in the winter, I generally don't. If I make it late Thursday night, if I have to deliver the food by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they're going to get it shredded.
Right. Oh, my God. Right. Okay. Very good. So what else is one of your favorites?
Well, you also need a good vegetable side. Mm-hmm. So really quick is, you know, we get a great assortment of frozen vegetables. And one of my favorites, most popular, is green beans. Mm-hmm. You can get the whole ones, the short ones, whichever ones, yellow ones, green ones, whatever it is. You have the you know, I guess they're not green beans, but yellow wax beans. Mm-hmm. Let them dry. Sit in a colander, dry out. Throw it in a pot with a handful of like those dried garlic slices. Again, jarred garlic or frozen garlic. Herbs of your choice. Mm-hmm. I personally like basil, oregano, parsley, little olive oil. And let it get really hot for about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then turn off the pot. And just let it sweat.
I also like that you, the recipe as it's written is it's dried basil, dried parsley. Like it's
yes,
not like we have to
using dried herbs.
Right.
If you have fresh herbs around, like I actually have made for myself some frozen little containers of pesto that I can use for that, or chimichurri. I had leftover herbs from Shavuos. I mentioned to you on the phone the other day that I made a whole bunch of little cubes of all these different mixed herbs so that I can just throw that in the pot. But if you don't have that, because it's sweating, it's going to open up again and it's not going to taste dry.
Oh.
But the thing about sweating is you have it on for 10 minutes, off, stayed covered for 10 minutes, and then dump it into something to cool off or it's going to wilt.
Right,
and nobody wants soggy green beans.
No.
That's just, I mean, maybe
just
babies.
Ask my family.
Maybe the little kids. Right.
Right.
That's definitely not fun. It just gets mushy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. All right, so let's round out with something else that you totally love, another one of your favorite one-pot recipes.
So the last thing is something that I learned here in Israel, deli roll. I don't know why Americans don't do it half as much as Israelis, but you get your kilo of pastry dough for like 15 shekel. Mm-hmm. You get your double pack of meat for usually 800 grams for about 30 shekel.
And this is deli meat.
This is just the regular deli meat that's half salami, half turkey pastrami.
Mm-hmm.
My trick is I like to roll the dough out a little bit thinner because that way you get a more, you know, you can have more of a roll. You get the meat and then you spread a few tablespoons of Dijon mustard again.
Mm-hmm.
If you can use other mustards, but the Dijon has its little kick.
Oh,
that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But just enough, just a small layer of that. Layer out your meat with a slight overlap and then roll it up jelly roll style the long way in so that you still have a nice long roll.
Right, yes.
And then in a wax paper pan, you can use a 9x13, or you can use like a 9-inch round and kind of spiral it around.
Nice.
Or if you want to be fancy, cut it into 1-inch pieces and bake them on their side, and they look like roses. The deli roll berekas, and they look like roses. And another trick that my sister Lachani taught me was she uses duck sauce, but I use, in Israel, we have their sweet chili sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And just a little bit, just drizzle a little bit over it. If you have your gloves around, you want to rub it in, it doesn't have to cover it all. Just a little bit of that zing and sweetness is just fun on the top, especially with the spiciness of the Dijon inside.
Great. Hey, Ahuva, we have a couple of minutes. How about a bonus on your birthday?
Well, I had a friend say to me, Erev Pesach, I don't have time for kugels. I said, what about broccoli kugel or cauliflower kugels? She goes, what do you mean?
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, everybody gets frozen vegetables. Then all the kosher websites, everyone has their versions of broccoli kugels and cauliflower kugels, which I grew up with my grandmother making them, and they take literally minutes. As long as it's defrosted and dried out, you know, you let it sit in the colander a little bit, dry it out. You just whisk in some eggs, some mayonnaise, some spices, and that's it. And just throw it in the oven. And it works with broccoli is very popular. So everyone has their own little secrets. Mm-hmm. I put in a little bit of hot sauce. My friend puts in mustard. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got their own little secret there. I know people that use, my grandmother used to use onion soup mix. And in her cauliflower kugel, mm-hmm. she used to actually take cornflakes and crush them on the top to give it a nice little crunch.
Ooh, that sounds
I mean,
nice.
You can use the gluten-free ones and they still stay crunchy also. And that's just a nice rounded out, good hot or cold.
Right.
Summer.
Oh, good. Good.
And
that's important.
So fast.
And you know, I'm wondering, because I've seen a variation where there's some recipes with broccoli or broccoli kugel, where they you put down the broccoli in the pan and then put the rest of the ingredients mixed together. You put that over your broccoli.
When I do a broccoli quiche, mm-hmm. whether I'm doing a crust or not, in the prepared pan with or without the crust, you lay out your broccoli and you pour your mixed, you know, milk and cheese and stuff over it, and then just bake it, and that's it to make mm-hmm. a broccoli quiche. Like, people overcomplicate these things, but if you are able to get good frozen vegetables like Bodeg brand, mm-hmm. it's just minutes.
Good.
I mean, like. Yeah, it's cheating a little, but sometimes it's okay. For kugels and things like that, frozen, and even some salads, frozen vegetables are okay.
All right. It's really nice that you stopped by on your birthday to talk about some of your favorite recipes. What are you doing next? What's your big plan for the birthday after
I'm
today?
I'm hoping to make it to the beach.
Okay.
With my sunscreen, of course.
Oh, gosh, yes, of course.
And then find a nice restaurant near the beach.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Get a steak. Birthday steak.
Birthday steak.
Who needs birthday cake? We're too old for those empty calories.
Okay. I hear. All right. Great. Thank you so much again, Ahuva. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for us today on the Modern Jewish Home Show. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned for more Straight Talk from Israel on Israel News Talk Radio.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising@israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.